Blog Talk Radio.
Spectrum technique. Special technique of shadow boxing.
Hello, what's going on? You are listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show here live on Blog Talk Radio. I am your host, James Bell, lead boxing analyst for the CHT on sports.com. That's the cohort truth on sports.com. You can get articles and more through the CHT on sports. And also other articles in reference to football, basketball, baseball, and the like. We're going to be getting into the discussion here in a few moments, but first we will have a few commercials. This is the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, all this is Matthew Long with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports and the Triangle Offense. I just wanted to take some time to tell you about Pest Bear, a wonderful company. They've been around for 20-plus years. They have over 11 branches in Florida. Great licensed, certified specialists, and guess what? They do more than pest control. They also take care of termites as well as lawn care, sprinkler systems, and much, much more. Call today, 1-800-PESTBEAR. That's 1-800-737-8232.
WCSB Sports and MRN Broadcasting, powered by blogtalkradio.com.
Football talk like you've never heard it before. Possibly one of the funniest podcasts in sports today. That's right, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night at 8:30 p.m. right here on Blog Talk Radio. We have Cali Mike, Chi-Town, Carcel Mathis, and the Mouth of the South, Tony Watley. They give you a different perspective of football that may not be found anywhere else. You may also catch the callers with some classic lines as well.
There's a black olive.
What is it?
I don't know exactly what it is
off the top
of my head.
Okay, I know you're in front of your computer right now. Look it up.
I'm about to look it up right now, all right?
National blackout level.
I never said national blackout level, liar.
Yes, you did.
No, I didn't.
Okay, Florida blackout level. Whatever blackout level you want to look up, look it up. I'll wait.
You can't compare a fifth-year quarterback to a 20-year quarterback. How do you compare Cam Newton to Peyton Manning? That's impossible.
I don't even think Cam Newton will get a contract extension.
Tampa Bay Buccaneers are the worst franchise in the National Football League. The worst franchise in the National Football League.
The difference between Jameis Winston, Matt Ryan, and Cam Newton is Jameis Winston has the ability to lead a team to a championship.
Once again, people, the CMT Firestorm Football Talk Show every Wednesday night on the MRN Broadcasting Network.
Jameis Winston is just stupid.
All right, we are here back live on the Boxing Source Radio Show. Number to dial in, 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Press the one key to get on cue and you'll be able to talk in live on the show. we pretty much, you know, had things get back on track here this week in the sport of boxing. The month of October was, you know, pretty much a down month with not much action within the boxing world. You know, no major fights on pay-per-view or on the major networks that cover the sport. And so we pretty much were waiting until, you know, this month of November here to get the sport, you know, back on track. And so we got it started with the card that happened last night over at the Wynn Las Vegas, as we had, you know, a few fights going on out there. As we saw a few titles be on the line, we had the WBO welterweight championship on the line, or as I like to call it, the top ranked welterweight championship on the line, as we had the person coming in there defending the title, Jesse Vargas, who was coming in there at 27 wins and just one loss, with the loss coming to Timothy Bradley, that was for the interim WBO welterweight championship, against Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao coming in there at 57 wins and six losses with two draws. His recent win was, you know, early this year against Timothy Bradley. And so you had those guys there as the main event at the Thomas and Mack Center in Las Vegas. And the crowd there was, you know, pretty enthusiastic for the returning multi-division champion Manny Pacquiao. They're going up against Jesse Vargas, and it seemed like it would have been a kind of a intriguing matchup, but not very many people gave Jesse Vargas much of a chance. And what they were really going out there to look at was to see if Manny Pacquiao was going to be showing his age at 37 against somebody that was 10 years younger, or if he was, you know, able to still be able to command the ring, I would say, against someone who, you know, really hasn't had that many fights there at welterweight. I mean, while Jesse Vargas was the coming in there as the WBO welterweight champion, this was going to be his third fight in the welterweight division. Like I said, he did lose the interim WBO welterweight championship fight against Timothy Bradley. That was his first fight at the welterweight division. And then the second fight was in March at the DC Armory against Saddam Ali, as Saddam Ali was coming in there undefeated. But Saddam Ali also was somebody that was coming up from the 140-pound division. So you really hadn't seen Jesse Vargas go up against a valid welterweight, with the exception of Timothy Bradley. And in that fight, he got outboxed for mainly 11 rounds. And then he caught Timothy Bradley with a big shot that almost knocked Timothy Bradley down. And Bradley was able to weather the storm, so to speak, and also get a beneficial, you know, early stoppage of the fight there by the referee. But, you know, Jesse Vargas lost that fight to Timothy Bradley by decision, and so he was going in there to fight Manny Pacquiao with the WBO welterweight championship on the line. And what we basically saw was Manny Pacquiao, I would say, be basically who he has been against most of his opponents. You know, he was able to, you know, have a little feeling out process with Jesse Vargas. He, I would say he kind of had like a, you know, little slow start, but then he, you know, got back into it in the second round where he was able to use his left hand and catch Jesse Vargas with a left hand and score a knockdown there to give him an early lead in the particular fight. There were a couple of instances where Jesse Vargas had a little bit of success against Manny Pacquiao. What people were scouting with Jesse Vargas was if he was going to be able to connect with his right hand on Manny Pacquiao. And there were a couple of occasions where he was able to do that. I would say within the fifth and sixth rounds or so, he started to have success with it. And then there seemed to be one point where Manny Pacquiao was, you know, in a little bit of trouble there. And then what happened was Vargas kind of backed out or backed off from him and kind of like, you know, hit his gloves a couple of times, backed off, talking about, you know, trying to, you know, give himself some momentum. But by doing that, he basically, you know, let Pacquiao get a breather against him. And that, you know, kind of took away from the momentum that Vargas had there. With Manny Pacquiao being a southpaw and Jesse Vargas being a orthodox fighter, there was, you know, a few instances where you had their lead foot get crossed up, you know, Vargas tripping over a couple of times there. There were times where his glove did touch the canvas, but wasn't scored a knockdown as he was basically, you know, he basically tripped on Manny Pacquiao. But even with that, it still seemed like Manny Pacquiao had most of the success there against Jesse Vargas to score the unanimous decision win over Jesse Vargas. Right now, we got a caller in. Area code 813, what's going on with you?
Hey, what's up, Bambo? This is Terrell calling from Tampa. How's everything going?
Going good here, Brother Terrell. Just getting into the discussion of the main event at the Thomas and Mack Center there in Las Vegas with Manny Pacquiao getting the win for the top-ranked welterweight championship. Oops, did I say that? The WBO welterweight championship against Jesse Vargas, and was just going into it a little bit. What's your thoughts about what you saw from the fight?
Yeah, I was able to see a considerable portion of this fight, and despite my lack of mutual interest in this fight, I watched his boxing. I did consume the product. I mean, it's kind of like a predictable result, something that we anticipated. But nevertheless, they did have to go through with the fight. And this is boxing. Virtually anyone has a chance, especially when you do have a belt. If you have a talent level to grab a belt, you definitely have the ability and skill level to pull off a shocker. Despite the fact that you're a champion, and despite the fact that you're an underdog, even though you have the belt. I mean, probably one of the most apparent things I noticed for me, that was Manny's conditioning, his power, movement, things like that. I mean, for the most, it looked like Manny, for the most. But one thing, I didn't see any of that great explosiveness and power that he's been known for in the past. I didn't necessarily see that. I mean, the best thing I liked about Manny was his speed. He definitely displayed a speed advantage over Vargas. I mean, but credit to Vargas. Like for me personally, I call Vargas like a B plus level fighter at this point, even though the fact that he has a belt. I just think that his skill level, I think he has a certain ceiling for him that he's going to be able to achieve. I mean, if he can go past that, great for him. But I think he's going to be ultimately a B-plus fighter at this point and throughout his career. So, I mean, some of the facts that you mentioned on social media that, you know, this is a hand-picked opponent and they don't want to pick a guy with great lateral movement and stuff like that, and that can could box as well. But for the main thing, I definitely think that Pacquiao displayed a speed advantage over Vargas that got the better him in a lot of those exchanges. So to me, that was really the telling thing of the fight, you know. Mm-hmm. And that's despite the fact that Vargas was the quote unquote bigger man, taller man with longer reach and stuff like that. So I mean, Pacquiao got a win, but like I'm just very interested in seeing, you know, what he does going forward. And from this point, it certainly looks like he's going to continue to box him at this point, despite the fact that he's a senator and things like that, with his all his additional duties with his country. But he got a win. We anticipated that. What's next?
Yeah, I mean, what I basically gathered from the results of the fight that we had here between Manny Pacquiao and Jesse Vargas is that, I mean, number one, you have Jesse Vargas there. That was in his third fight at the welterweight division. And, you know, he's basically 1-2 right now in the welterweight division. He did lose to Timothy Bradley in his first fight at welterweight, and he now lost to Manny Pacquiao in his third fight at welterweight. And going up against Saddam Ali there, I mean, while Saddam Ali seemed to, you know, have some type of, you know, skills there at 140 pounds, this is, you know, another fighter that was coming up from 140 pounds to fight for the WBO welterweight championship. And what we have there is somebody that's, you know, still getting his feet, you know, within the welterweight division there, and then going up against a guy that has been in welterweight for a considerable amount of time in his career. And so what that shows is that you've got somebody that has a lot of experience there at welterweight and, you know, has over 65 fights in his career going up against someone that, you know, is barely getting his feet wet within the welterweight division. And so, of course, for some, they would say that Manny looks good against Jesse Vargas, but it's like I said on social media, if you match him up against, you know, somebody that has some type of skill, like a Floyd Mayweather or a Terrence Crawford, then he'll have issues with them. And so that's why I really don't know what is next in store for Manny Pacquiao coming up in 2017. Real quick here, we got area code 205 with us. What's going on with you?
What's going on, James? It's Mike Grady, man.
Hey there, Mike. What's going
Mike
on?
Mike Grady!
What's going on, Terrell?
True. So, Mike, what did you gather from the main event at the Thomas and Mack Center?
I mean, the outcome was what I expected. Manny Pacquiao wasn't unmotivated, so he definitely, did what he was supposed to do. I mean, I didn't lose any respect for Jesse Vargas from the fight. I think that Vargas definitely was outmanned. He wasn't like necessarily super outclassed. Like he in the words of Terrell, he said he showed a good account of himself. But at the end of the day, I mean, there was not too much he could do that would really hurt Manny Pacquiao. Manny Pacquiao was definitely being cautious. I wonder, though, after that second round where Pacquiao, you know, grazed him and he knocked him down, you know, did he kind of let up off of it to just be cautious and not get hit with anything, you know, stray?
Right.
But Jesse Vargas never stopped trying to win, though, so I respect that about him. You know, he definitely wanted to win the fight. I mean, it just wasn't too much he could do. I definitely think toward the end of the fight, you could see his tank just emptying, 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 like at a fast rate.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you did. And, you know, I think that little headbutt or collision that kind of caused a cut there on the corner of his you know, on the corner of his eye, you know, around his nose, you know, kind of discouraged him a little bit. But he was still, you know, still game within those late rounds and, you know, had a good little couple of exchanges with Manny Pacquiao there. But he wasn't able to pull off, you know, the upset win against them. So we had the results of the fight. We heard what, you know, Manny Pacquiao was basically saying after the fight. He said, you know, well, I mean, whoever the fans want me to fight, I fight. You know, but, I mean, with being under top rank, they only have a few guys that are out there within the welterweight division that is going to be matched up with. I mean, I know that they've, you know, kind of hinted at the idea of Pacquiao fighting Canelo Alvarez in the 154-pound division, but I really don't see that potentially happening. So I will start with Mike here. What do you think is next in store for Manny Pacquiao here in the 27th?
What do I think is next? So, I mean, I definitely think that Mayweather and Pacquiao will fight. Maybe not next. I think there is someone out there that Pacquiao could fight probably before Mayweather, and, you know, that's not going to be too big of a risk, but that'll be similar to a Jesse Vargas. I don't think he's going to fight Terrence Crawford, because what does Terrence Crawford really bring? I mean, of course it helps Bob Arum if he's trying to pass the torch, but how does that really benefit? Like, Terrence Crawford don't really bring no money to the table. He doesn't bring that much attention. So it's just like, why would Pacquiao even do that? I mean, if Pacquiao was to fight anybody, yeah, I think Canelo Alvarez would be a smart choice. But that fight would definitely have to be at 154. It wouldn't be no 155 or anything like that. Who else does think Pacquiao could fight? Yeah, I don't know who else, like, other than outside of either Mayweather or Canelo Alvarez, I'm not sure who's worthy, you know, or worth a risk of Pacquiao to even just step in the ring with him.
Mm.
Unless
he
fights, you know, like a mismatch again.
All right, so what you got?
Yeah, I mean, I mean, kind of like what Mike said, I really don't know who's going to fight. I mean, he's top ranked. I mean, we of course love to see him get in there with Crawford. I mean, basically, I look at it at this point now. They got the fight with Vargas. They got the title. That was in their plans. Of course, you still have to go out and execute those plans, which you did. Step number one's done. Okay, so what's next? 147. I don't have the WBO rankings in front of me right now, but certainly not Tim Bradley. That's not going to happen. We know that, and no one wants to see that, and there will be no virtual demand for that. One thing I'm interested to for me is I want to see what actual pay-per-view numbers are from last night's fight. That's definitely going to be very interesting going forward, particularly if they did some decent sales, I guess, 400,000 or something like that. If they did that with a Pacquiao Vargas, would HBO intervene and get back in the Manny Pacquiao business going forward? in regards to doing a pay-per-view for his next fight. But, of course, that all depends on the opponent, which is what we're talking about right now. So, I mean, I don't think that Manny can do a great pay-per-view because you definitely need that partner. And for me, that partner is definitely Crawford to do a good, solid pay-per-view. Will that happen? I don't know. I doubt it. I mean, you already had the chance to fight Crawford. So, I mean, Pacquiao, I'm trying to take some names out there in the welterweight division that he can fight, that someone that's on that doesn't fit that necessary model of being that athletic boxer, good lateral movement, things like that. I don't know who they can handpick. I really don't know. One thing I saw, too, that he said he'd be open to fighting Khan. That would draw some interest for me. You know, if he fought Khan, I would love to see that. I would.
And it's not that big of a risk either. You know, like he could, you know, definitely knock Khan out if he catch him the right way.
Right, and for me, I would love to see him fight Khan. Hope. You fight in boxing, you fight yourself. I hope. You always saying, I hope this could happen. I hope. You saying it over and over. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Like I was saying last night after the end of the fight, I didn't really think that, you know, at this point, that Manny Pacquiao would, you know, go ahead and take the risk to fight somebody that's, you know, young and is able to beat him there at the welterweight division. And, you know, when I say that, I mean, I say Terrence Crawford, but, you know, I also say Errol Spence. You know, Terrell mentioned the WBO rankings. I mean, you have there the WBO. You had Jesse Vargas that was there as a champion before the fight, and then Manny Pacquiao was slated as number one contender because he beat Timothy Bradley. And there at number three is Errol Spence Jr. And so, you know, while they're saying that maybe, you know, Bob Arum and Heyman are trying to, you know, get things a little patched up to try to see if they could get some fights going on, I'll believe it when I see it. And one of those things is having Manny Pacquiao go against the likes of Errol Spence. And, you know, over the career of Manny Pacquiao, you've never seen Bob Arum really match him up against a guy that could box or, you know, a slick mover. This goes all the way back to, you know, back in the days when he was fighting Eric Morales in the trilogy. And in between I think it was the second fight, Eric Morales fought Zahir Rahim and basically got outboxed and lost that fight. And they still went ahead with the Pacquiao-Morales fight, and Pacquiao never ended up fighting Zahir Rahim during that reign in that weight class. And so that carried over to when he was moving up. They didn't, you know, match him up against Floyd Mayweather at that time. They waited until, you know, last year to make that happen. So I don't see him fighting the likes of a Terrence Crawford who can move around laterally, who's a lefty, but could also fight in an orthodox position. And I don't see him fighting Errol Spence, somebody that has length, reach, speed, and can use and utilize his punches up close and at a distance. So if you're looking for somebody that, you know, may be able to fight him, while Amir Khan seems like a good idea, and it might be even an even better idea if they open up to having Manny Pacquiao fighting in England, depending on how much money that would be able to generate. Another guy that he may be able to fight if they actually have things up between Arum and Al Heyman is Andre Berto. Berto has basically been on the shelf here since his win against Ortiz. And so now with him, you know, basically on the shelf since they didn't match him up against Danny Garcia for the WBC belt, he's still, you know, looking for a fight. And so why not have him go up there against Manny Pacquiao? If
y'all are, you know, trying to break the ice as far as matching up guys within top rank in the whoever is under Al Heyman. So I would think that would be another possible matchup that could be made there within the welterweight division. What's your thoughts about that one? Hold on, y'all. Terrell? On Terrell, you on? Mike, you still on? Okay, and what's your thoughts on it?
I was listening, but I kind of wasn't listening. Tell me, what's the thoughts on what now?
Now, in reference to possibly having Andre Berto as an opponent for Manny Pacquiao.
Well, if he does that, he might as well fight like an Adrian Broner or something.
You don't think he would? I mean, because you're talking about it in a money aspect, then.
Yeah, as far as money, more glamour. You know, it would legitimize him having a pay per view. He would sell probably better numbers, maybe. But I mean, if he fights Andre Berto, I mean that's a legitimate opponent. Like, if he was gonna fight anyone, that would be the type of person he fights, like an Adrian Broner. or Andre Berto, somebody established, but somebody who you know can't beat him.
Right, true that. All
right, and I'm sorry about that. I would love to see him fight Andre Berto. This is somebody that's in need of an opponent. This is somebody that has a name, that has accomplishments at this point. One thing with Pacquiao Broner, for example. Aaron basically stated before that Broner has priced himself out of that fight. Me personally, I don't like the sound of that. It sounds like to me that Aaron doesn't want to give him probably whatever he's asking for. Because me personally, I think that a Broner Pacquiao fight could definitely generate the type of money that both sides are looking for. It's just a matter of how much you want to give the other guy, you know. But as far as Berto Pacquiao, that's a definitely a fight to, I think, to a degree. You can sell it to more than just an average boxing fan. I think some other people will tune in just to watch that, whether it be global sales from the Philippines or stuff like that. People will buy that fight. But at the same time, at this point, it's queer. I mean, Manny, he looked solid last night. He looked solid. But at the same time, you know, it goes back to matchmaking. Do you want your fighter to be exposed by a good boxer? And, for example, like what you guys are saying now, that they carefully match him against Vargas because you're looking for someone that doesn't have the ability to master Pacquiao for speed and power to a degree. Well, Berto certainly represents that. We know he has good power, and we know he has more than good speed on top of that. So that would definitely present a lot of problems for Pacquiao to solve. And his famed coach Freddie Roach. So, I mean, man, I just for Pacquiao's next fight, please don't sell us no junk. We don't want to eat. We don't want to eat or consume any junk. Please don't. There's too much of that in boxing, and that's almost like Floyd Mayweather going down to fight like an up and comer, something like that, like a Jesse Vargas or something like that, or Saddam Ali. It's like we don't want to see that.
Right.
So, like I said, for Pac's next fight, do not feed us no junk. We don't want no junk. So, give us somebody that's real. I mean, Mayweather took some criticism for fighting Berto, but he could do that. He could do that. But then again, Mayweather's criticized for so much, and people just fail to look into the finer details of his records and of his opponents instead of just saying what's on their feelings and stuff like that. So. But like I said, Pacquiao Berto, that would be a great fight, I think, at this point.
True. All right. We'll get into a little bit more within the fight card here in a bit. Just taking about a 30-second timeout here for commercials, and then we'll get right back into it. Once again, you're listening to the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the Emberin Broadcasting Channel on Blog Talk Radio.
tuned in to Boxing 30. This is a 30-day boxing program that will teach you the basic fundamentals of boxing. And we're going to do a footwork drill. Therefore, we're going to learn a 30-minute workout, non-stop workout that will get your body mean, lean, and in a fighting machine.
All right, folks, we are back here live on the Boxing Source Radio Show here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel. Number to dial in to talk boxing is 347-237-5539. That is 347-237-5539. Press one key to get on cue, and you'll be able to talk him live on the show. The last little tidbit there was one of my friends there, Duran Flowers. He has a boxing training regimen that he bases off in Jacksonville and other locations there. So we'll be getting more information in reference to the Boxing 30 training sessions that he has over the next couple of weeks. But getting back into it here with the fight card that happened last night at the Thomas & Mack Center, we did have, you know, more, I would say, top-ranked titles on the line as we had. We also had Nonito Donaire fighting on the card there against Jesse Magdaleno. And Jesse Magdaleno was coming in there undefeated 23-0. He had 17 knockouts coming in there. He didn't necessarily have, you know, any significant wins within the division. He did win, you know, a youth super bantamweight championship earlier in his career, but he, you know, was coming in there as a relative unknown, but he, you know, had a little bit of skill there going up against Nonito Donaire. And of course, you know about the Filipino Flash and his, you know, notable fights that he's had to rise up to be a bantamweight champion, a you know, flyweight champion, super flyweight champion. So he was a multiple division champion going up in the ranks here. But of course, we know in 2013 he ran into the buzzsaw known as Guillermo Rigondeaux and got schooled to a unanimous decision in 2013. And then in 2014 he went up against Axeman Nicholas Walters and got knocked out. But he had, you know, a little win streak after that, a four-fight win streak. Was able to get, like I said, the late year and defend it once against Zolt Bedak to get a TKO victory. Not many people know who Zolt Bedak is. It was a low-rated fight anyway, so he was able to get that fight in the Philippines and get a win. And so months after that, going up against this under prospect here, Jesse Magdaleno, and it looked like he was, you know, basically running into somebody in Magdaleno that had a little bit of skill, a little bit of boxing skill, and could take punch. So Magdaleno was basically outboxing him for most of that fight. And, you know, he had a big lead against Nonito Donaire. And Nonito Donaire looked like he was trying to go for the knockout starting around, I would say, the ninth or tenth round, and was just unsuccessful. And Magdaleno was still able to, you know, throw shots back at him. So, you know, by the time the end of the fight happened, looked like, you know, Magdaleno was going to get the decision win, and he got the unanimous decision win over Nonito Donaire, staying undefeated at 24-0.
and Nonito Denier falling to 37 wins and 4 losses. And so now that, you know, basically shows Denier as dropping down within the ranks of the super bantamweight division, and it's unknown as to what else is left out there for Nonito Denier to do within the super bantamweight division. So just going to start here with Mike Grady. What's your thoughts about Nonito Denier and his result there against Jesse Magdaleno? See, Mike, you still on?
Yes, I'm still on.
All right. Were you able to catch that? Yeah. Were you able to catch that fight there with Magdaleno and Denier?
I saw like glimpses of the end of the fight, and the parts that I saw, it pretty much looked like Magdaleno controlled the action. I didn't really see what was happening that made him control the action, but I just know I saw Donaire covered up at certain points in time, and you know, Magdaleno was pretty much kind of hitting him. But
yeah,
you know, I didn't watch it enough to actually comment on it.
All right, hey Terrell, not sure if you're able to catch glimpses of it. Were you?
No, I was not able to catch this fight, but I'm reviewing some material right now. I see that it was kind of a split decision. Two judges had it winning, had it for Magdaleno, 116-112, and another judge, the third judge, had it 118-110. I mean, that's the one that pops out, sets off to me, the 118-110 score. That right there can kind of tell you the type of work that Magdaleno did over Donaire and securing this title for himself from the WBO. I mean, I remember back when Donaire lost. Who was his first loss to? Was that to Rigondeaux, right? Was it not?
Yeah, it was Rigondeaux. Well, actually, he had one early loss, but he ran a big win streak before losing Rigondeaux.
Yeah, but the Rigondeaux loss, that was the one that was a definitive point in his career where he's like, wow, I can't believe it. And in that fight, we know he simply got outclassed. And at that point, when that fight happened, Denier was definitely a big deal and definitely a boxer still on right there on the cusp of being, I don't want to say great, but definitely anointed by HBO. You know, they had definitely anointed him to be one of their flagship holders and stuff like that. And like,
right,
Denier, Rigondeaux came in and outclassed him and in a sense made it look easy. And that's your first real decline of Donaire. And it's a shame because, like, I mean, it's not, he only has 4 losses, but like we talk about a lot, is how, what kind of fighter are you going to be after that loss? Like for David Lemieux, for example, we're learning some things more about him. He's resilient. He's hungry still. He hasn't had a fight with a top opponent, but he took a loss to Golovkin, which rushed into that fight. But for right now, he looks okay. But for Denier, moving back to him, like I said, that Rigondeaux loss, that definitely, to me, marks the decline of Denier. Even in this fight last night with Magdaleno, he thought he won the fight. Well, a 118-110 score definitely doesn't suggest that. You know, I know Denier had his moments, particularly in a ninth round when he was able to do some pop shots on Magdaleno. But, I mean, he's not done. I don't think he's done. He's not shot. But he definitely needs to, what can he do? Get back in line. That's all he can do.
Mm-hmm.
Get back in line for, you know, the WBO. So, I mean, because Ray in that division got, well, of course, Magdaleno got the belt now. Got Ray Vargas, a couple other guys. Don't have no great names in that division in the WBO, mm-hmm. but, I mean, really, it's get back in line and keep on winning if he maintains that hunger and desire to be great, you know.
True. Yeah, they really don't have, you know, that much there. within the super bantamweight division. I mean, of course, they're going to stay clear away from Guillermo Rigondeaux. And yeah, they do have Ray Vargas there floating around. Scott Quigg is still, you know, out there within that particular division. So there's a few candidates, you know, out there that Daenerys could probably fight. If Top Rank and Golden Boy Promotions, you know, are still able to, you know, they're able to work together. I mean, they've had a couple of fight cards together this year. Maybe they can match Daenerys up to, with Oscar's nephew, Diego De La Hoya, that's there in the super bantamweight division. So that could be a potential match that could get some interest. Or if Daenerys is pretty much on his way down, a fight between him and Diego De La Hoya would probably be that particular fight where he'd see if he still has a little bit left or he doesn't. As Diego De La Hoya is actually shown here in the WBO rankings, rated at number 14 at this current juncture. So that is a possibility to happen there. Real quick, trying to see the other particular match they had there that was kind of notable is Oscar Valdez there at the featherweight division, moving up to 21-0 with 19 KOs against a overmatched Hiroshige Asawa there. So he was able to get a TKO victory there within, I think it was six rounds or so, but he could have ended it a lot earlier than that. But he was able to just get a few rounds in. And this is a up-and-coming guy there at the featherweight division. So I would say he's somebody to, you know, watch out for. He's a he's rated there within the top 10 in some people's ratings within the featherweight division. But it's just a matter of time to see if he's able to, you know, fix the likes of a Gary Russell Jr. or Lee Selby or something like that while, you know, holding the WBO featherweight championship. All right, we got about less than 15 minutes here on the show. If you want to get in before we go into overtime, number to dial in is 347-237-5539. Once again, 347-237-5539. Push one key, get on cue, and you'll be able to talk live on the show. All right. We're basically like getting back into it in reference to the sport of boxing. We had this fight card here on November 5th, and so we're moving forward to what's going on in November 12th. And so what's going on there is, you know, we have the fight card that's on Spike TV with a headline by Danny Garcia and Samuel Vargas there. Actually, that they're seeing that, looks like they're showing that as a non-title fight because it's scheduled for 10 rounds instead of the championship 12. So I'm looking to see here. I don't think that Samuel Vargas is not in the WBC rankings. He's in the WBA rankings there, but not the WBC. So I guess that is why that particular fight is just 10 rounds. And we also have JoJo Dan going up against Jared Hurd. And they're saying that's at 154. So JoJo Dan moving up from 147 to 154 to fight Jared Hurd. But also what's notable about what's happening on November 12th is at Monte Carlo, HBO will be televising a few fights there. Jason Sosa will put up his WBO Junior Lightweight Championship up against Stephen Smith. Jimmy McDonald will go up against Liborio Solis for the regular bantamweight title. And the main event is Luis King Kong Ortiz against Malik Scott I think that will be for the interim WBA heavyweight championship there. So we're going to have Luis Ortiz back in the ring. He had a little back and forth spat with Oscar De La Hoya and Golden Boy Promotions, and was basically released from the contract from them, and he got picked up by Eddie Hearn and their promotional company. So you have him there with Matchroom Boxing, and his first fight is under Matchroom Boxing is for the vacant Intercontinental Heavyweight Championship there. So we know about what happened here with Malik Scott and his previous matches. He was able to get a win or a couple of wins here, but that was back in 2014 and 2015. So he's only fought like once per year since 2014. So he has this fight here against Luis King Kong Ortiz, and looks like Matchroom Boxing is trying to get these notable heavyweights under their banner. So what do you think about Luis Ortiz getting this fight here against Malik Scott, and if he's able to get through that, what his future plans could be?
Is this the same Malik Scott that gave us that barn burner fight of the year candidate with Wilder? That's the same Malik Scott.
Yes, that's the same Malik Scott that gave us that fight of the year, man.
Yeah, just want to make sure. Well, I mean, for Ruiz, I mean, it's very interesting that Golden Boy allowed him to buy out of his contract and move on to Hearn. Just a small note. Hearn basically said, "Well, this guy might be the greatest fighter out there in the heavyweight division, but we need to get people to know who he is." And I kind of like, people already know who this guy is. I mean, of course, he's never had a title shot, but people know who he is. You know, it looks like, and I kind of applaud her for this, that they're trying to line him up for Joshua eventually. If all those things fall into place, I mean, that's a lot to be said. I mean, it's that Joshua wins this fight against Molina, and Joshua win against Klitschko. I think I don't think it's signed yet, but definitely on the drawing boards for that. But Ruiz is that he has that mystique on him right now. It's like so much you want to see from him, but it's kind of hard to see. It's kind of like a freaking a unicorn right now. But I mean, of course, we already know he's going to take care of business with Malik Scott. And then the great thing I love about this, he's already getting a fight for next month as well, right?
It almost looked like they were in the works to have another fight in store for him. That would be on the undercard of Joshua versus Molina, but that's not necessarily set in stone as of yet.
Well, I certainly hope that happens. I mean, a lot of times you see where future opponents are put on the same card in regards to marketing them for a fight down the road. So I forgot the opponent, the proposed opponent for the undercard for Ruiz on the Joshua card. But I mean, I don't think Scott has any lightning in his fist to pose any sort of upset whatsoever, you know. Like I said, we look at Malik Scott's performance against Wilder. It was no words for that.
None. All right, there, Mike Grady, what you got for Luis Ortiz against Malik Scott?
I mean, definitely going to be a knockout. In what round? Probably, of course, less than six, maybe less than 3-2, 3-4. Luis Ortiz should have no trouble with him. And I guess it'll give us something to compare it with Wilder.
So in reference to like Deontay Wilder and Luis Ortiz.
Yeah, I mean, it's not going to happen no time soon, but I'm just saying it'll give us something like a metric stick sort of for how – I mean, we all know Malik Scott going to get knocked out.
It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, it's pretty much when and how. How and when.
Yeah. And I was looking at the thing here with Luis Ortiz and – saw the fight that was on HBO against Brian Jennings and, you know, went to the DC Armory to see him fight against Tony Thompson. And, I was, you know, much more impressed with, you know, what he was able to do against Brian Jennings than against Tony Thompson because, I mean, I knew, you know, what the result was going to be against Tony Thompson, but it just kind of seemed like he, you know, took his time in order to, you know, prolong that particular fight. In that fight against Brian Jennings, I think he was, you know, pretty much in his game and able to execute what he was able to execute there against Brian Jennings. So, and it's like Terrell was saying. I mean, people do know who Luis Ortiz is. I mean, a lot of us fight fans have basically said that Luis Ortiz may be the best heavyweight out there. So I don't necessarily understand where they would say, you know, that he needs to be more, he needs more exposure. The only way that I would say that he needs more exposure is that, you know, having him in this particular venue here in Monaco, or trying to see if later on he has that fight that would be the next month as an undercard for Joshua and Molina. So if he's able to get in that undercard there between Joshua and Molina, then maybe he'll be able to be seen by the crowd there in England. So I think, this particular fight here against Malik Scott, he should be able to get the easy win. It's just a matter of what's going to happen with him after that. And, you know, Joshua seems like he has a lot of options going into 2017 as, you know, they have, you know, his potential fight against Vladimir Klitschko. They're trying to get in the works or potential fight between him and the number one contender there for the IBF and Joseph Parker. So there's a lot of options that are out there, you know, for Anthony Joshua, especially if Joseph Parker is able to get that fight in there against Andy Ruiz for the vacant WBO heavyweight championship and then still move forward with a fight between Parker and Anthony Joshua to unify those two belts. So then that could be something that could bring a lot of interest and money in the heavyweight division and, you know, most notably Anthony Joshua. I mean, it seems like he is right now the superstar in the heavyweight division. All right, less than 60 seconds in the show here. If you want to listen to Overtime now, you could get in 347-237-5539 or wait for the podcast to be available on the MRN Broadcasting channel on Blog Talk Radio. All right. Just going into Overtime here, we do have, of course, the fight between Andre Ward and Sergey Kovalev for the light heavyweight championships there. And, you know, we've gone through this fight, you know, multiple times. But what I haven't really got into is that, you know, I've picked Ward and, you know, we've we've all picked Ward, but I'm rooting for Ward in this particular fight against Sergey Kovalev for multiple reasons. One is because of, you know, this fight here that's kind of like, well, it hasn't really been billed as, you know, USA versus Russia or USA versus, you know, foreign country. But, you know, Andre Ward, particularly to me, hasn't really gotten enough respect in the boxing circles that I feel he should get. Yeah, he's been, you know, kind of rated as, you know, one of the top 1 or 2 pound for pound fighters in the sport, but it doesn't seem like he's, you know, been the necessary superstar that he should be, you know, within boxing circles, within the boxing fans, and particularly, you know, the insiders within the sport of boxing. I mean, like, the more notable boxing columnists and commentators haven't really given him the shine that he deserves. And this has kind of been pointed out multiple times by, you know, some trainers and, you know, fighters. In particular, Angel Garcia said this a couple of years ago in reference to Andre Ward, in that, you know, HBO kind of really hadn't treated him very well, and that he's kind of been, quote unquote, set up to be forced to move into the light heavyweight division against Sergey Kovalev instead of, you know, giving them fights there within the super middleweight division where they still have valid challengers there for Andre Ward to fight. And so now he has this big fight against Sergey Kovalev for the light heavyweight titles. And it's like, well, if he basically wins this fight, what else is there? Ward actually hinted at this a couple of years ago. They said, well, I mean, y'all haven't been able to give me fights here at the super middleweight division. And so if they offer, you know, me to move up to light heavyweight, I mean, all that they're going to have up there for me at light heavyweight is Sergey Kovalev. And if I beat him, then what? What else is there for me to do at light heavyweight if I beat Sergey Kovalev? And I would say that I root for him because you don't necessarily see the HBO guys giving him as much praise as they do towards the Manny Pacquiao's and the Gennady Golovkins that they have under the HBO banner. And so I kind of side with them on that, and, you know, potentially to see if this will be his last fight under contract under HBO, or if they're going to renew his deal with HBO and Roc Nation Sports. So that's what I got, you know, on that as far as, like, why I'm siding with Andre Ward there against Sergey Kovalev. Starting with Mike Brady, what do you think about his potential, or, you know, what's on the line for Andre Ward there against Sergey Kovalev?
I'll take it, Jay. What's funny, this is one of these fights that is huge in all boxing circles. This is a huge fight. And this is a fight that's been, to use that word, simmering for quite some time. And what's the funny thing about this is, like, how much hype is it really for this fight? I mean, look at a fight like when Mayweather fought Pacquiao, when that finally happened. It was huge. You had people on the left and right, you know, and you had more than an average box fan wanting to consume the fight. I mean, here you look at a Ward Kovalev. Ward, great story, hadn't lost a fight ever. I mean, there's virtually, I don't think no one that's in the program can say that, you know. And here you got Kovalev, who's a supreme monster, knockout machine, things like that. But you really look at this, and you're like, where's the hype of this fight? outside of people in boxing. It's kind of strange. And kind of what you're alluding to right now, why didn't HBO push Ward to be more marketable? Because they've definitely done that to numerous fighters before. Some have backfired on them. And they had a great level of success with and getting behind fighters and pushing them to the top and pass and getting me known past your typical boxing fan. I mean, but this fight right here, Ward Kovalev, this is one of the best fights in potentially the best fights in the last 5 to 7 years. I can easily say that, and that's simply because of the record of Kovalev, what he's done with his accomplishments and his record. And certainly with the record of Ward, this is definitely one of the best potential matchups in the last five, 7 years. It's crazy because you look at it, and I tell you, if you mention this to like a regular person, in a sense, on the street, they probably wouldn't know who either one is, and that's a shame. That's really a shame because this is going to be a great, great fight. But like I said, you look at HBO, and obviously they only got behind them so much, and you kind of ask the question of why. Why is that? Is it because of style? You can't say that. We know Ward's not a knockout machine, but this guy has a squeaky clean image. And they should have been able to market him in a better sense, the way he's known past the average in boxing circles. But that's just not the case. And it's really a shame that the average fan outside of boxing is not interested in this fight and probably don't even know about the fight for the most. It's a shame.
Yeah, man. I mean, here you are. You have the number one guy in the light heavyweight division is going up against the number one guy that was at the super middleweight division there to, you know, basically see if they're, you know, one of the top pound-for-pound fighters in the sport. And not only, I mean, you haven't really seen much of the overall interest in this fight. It's showing in the overall purse because in the purse, you have Sergey Kovalev getting $7 million and you have Andre Ward getting $5 million. And the thing about it is this particular fight has been known for almost a year and a half. Once, you know, Andre Ward signed that, you know, extension or that deal to fight Sergey Kovalev, that was in a three-fight package. So people knew about this fight for at least a year now, and yet you haven't necessarily seen the overall interest in this fight. And it's kind of shocking to me because it's like you were saying. I mean, everybody knew about Manny Pacquiao against Floyd Mayweather, and mainly that was because of the internal buzz that came from Manny Pacquiao and the internal and external buzz that came with Floyd Mayweather. And so you don't necessarily have that internal and external thing with either one of these fighters, so you don't necessarily get the amount of notoriety that these two fighters should get within the sport of boxing. And to me, I'm not really seeing it from the major media networks that, you know, cover the sport. You're not seeing it in you know, ESPN. You're not seeing it within you know, Fox Sports, and you know, you're not seeing it with a lot of these major, I would say, media outlets, you know, within, you know, newspaper publications or online, and I would say the internet through like a Bleacher Report or, you know, something like that. So you're not seeing it through either any one of those media outlets there. So It's going to be something when this fight is going to come off on pay-per-view, and the numbers, once the numbers come out, it's going to be very low because of, you know, the lack of overall interest in building up the fight. They really haven't, you know, shown that they have that much interest, especially when you have somebody like Kathy Duva, who, you know, was over the course of the year trying to smear the name of R.J. Ward and saying that he isn't appearing in for media conferences and other things there, but, you know, the timing of you setting up these media conferences makes it so he's not able to make them. So you're trying to put, you know, R.J. Ward in a bad light. And so I would say that kind of goes into what I was saying about, you know, a lot of the people within the boxing circles being unfair towards R.J. Ward and why I want R.J. Ward to win this fight more than I've wanted anybody to win a fight in years.
And just one more point in regards to that on the Kovalev side. If you look back to a fighter from a while back with Russian roots, although he didn't live in Russia during the bulk of his career, Kasa Zhu. Course that your hardcore boxing fans, they knew who Kasa Zhu was. But at the same time, I mean, granted, boxing was a bit different back then. Boxing has it slipped some? It has. But it's still hit or stay. But back then, a lot of people knew who Kasa Zhu was. I mean, dude had a belt. He's a good fighter. I guess you can maybe call him great. He's a great fighter.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah.
But a lot of people knew who he was. I mean, and he had Russian roots. Look at Kovalev, for example. I mean, once again, I mean, he's part of his fight, too. I mean, he's not greatly known outside of your hardcore boxing fans, but it's like someone, it's a shame because these are two talents, and people outside of boxing don't really know about this fight. So, I mean, does that speak to the state of boxing? If it does speak to the state of boxing, once again, look at the network that's been behind these two individuals. What have they done with these people, you know? And have they done their fair share in regards to marketing? And you look at Ward, like I said, he has a squeaky clean image inside the ring and outside the ring. And somebody can say, well, oh, he's not controversial, so you really can't market that. That's bull crap. I mean, because every day you see athletes on TV, every single day in commercials, that have good images in their sport and outside of the sport. So Ward is definitely marketable. The Son of God, I think he calls himself or something like that. I mean, but you look at Broner. I think someone like Broner, for example, who has controversy, he's still marketable. But back to Ward, the guy has a squeaky clean image. This guy should be on commercials, peddling products and stuff like that, endorsing all kinds of products. Why isn't that the case? Why hasn't that happened? That's not all on his team. I'm sure his team has probably tried to secure some things like that for the break into mainstream. I mean, because, you know, that's your ticket into becoming that everyday figure, that everyday brand that people know about. I mean, mm-hmm. Mayweather, for example, love him or hate him, he's an everyday brand at this point. And Ward, with his accomplishment, should have already be there. And it's a shame that he's not. It's a shame.
It's
definitely true. The sum of it all is you know, what you get out of it, because neither person, which I think you said this, but neither person has that quality about them to where they're like, oh, let me make a bunch of noise and come and see what I'm doing. So, I mean, I agree that that's BS and that you say you can't market a person like that. But as far as, you know, mainstream, you know, people want to watch us TV, that's pretty much what they look for. They look for some type of storyline, you know, something that'll sell. And I mean, both guys are pretty much working guys, you know, working class guys, and they're going to come to the gym and make it happen and, you know, get at you, and they don't really care about talking, of course, unless you talk to them. So throw that in there, throw the fact that, you know, like you said, the network that that sponsor them, they don't have that big budget to just throw money like that. So throw that in there as well. Mm-hmm. I mean, then it's kind of what you expect. Like, people, yeah, I don't think the fight will do well as far as the pay-per-view numbers. But I think that if this fight, you know, if it's interesting, then they could put a lot more behind it, you know, as far as resources. But I do think that I saw either Andre Ward, I think it was Andre Ward, he was on the First Take, maybe. Don't quote me on there, but I think he was on First Take. So that's ESPN, right?
Well, yeah, I think they've had Andre Ward on ESPN a couple of times, you know, in reference to him and his talk with his little back and forth that with Gennady Golovkin. But after that, I'm not sure, you know, if they really put him on in reference to this upcoming fight between him and Sergey Kovalev. And it's like both of y'all were mentioning in reference to HBO. It's been a big change, you know, in reference to their interest in the sport of boxing since the former president of HBO Sports, Ken Hirschman, stepped down. So now you have, instead of a lot of those fights being on regular HBO World Championship Boxing, they're on HBO pay-per-view. And this is another, I would say this is another example of a fight that could have been on HBO World Championship Boxing and would have been very successful as far as the amount of viewership in comparison to having it on HBO pay-per-view. And
yeah, definitely.
You know,
like 2 or 3, like millions of views, definitely.
Yeah, yeah. You would have 2.5 to 3 million views on HBO World Championship Boxing if this was there. And to add to the fact that HBO, I think HBO had something in place for December 10th for Canelo Alvarez if he didn't have an injury to his hand against the, you know, against in his last fight that he had there against Liam Smith. So now you have that open spot on December 10th. You didn't necessarily have something, you know, big planned there, especially with, you know, the fight that's coming up the week after with Lomachenko going against Walters on November 26th. And so now December 10th has kind of been, you know, filled up. You did put Terrence Crawford there against John Molina. That's going to be on HBO. But that's going up against a lot of things going on with Showtime, as they'll have, I would say, two separate cards on in the same day with the night feature being Charlo against Julian Williams. So now you basically had a case where you may have lost a lot of money over the course of this year within HBO Sports because you put these, you know, fights on pay-per-view instead of on regular TV. I would rather, you know, you would rather have some of these fights be on regular HBOs just so they could get the amount of interest that they do. Then, if you want, you could get all of those fighters together on one pay-per-view card that will garner, you know, enough pay-per-view buys to where you're able to make enough money from it. Unless if you have Canelo there standing on his own, or maybe Gennady Golovkin, you know, standing on his own fighting somebody, then you would have the numbers you would need on pay-per-view to seem like it's a profitable fight card for you to televise. But other than that, you won't get that much out of these fights here, like with Terrence Crawford and Victor Postol, and here with Andre Ward against Sergey Kovalev. I mean, yeah, you do have a lot of, you know, fights there within that particular card that you can, you know, have there, which includes like DC's Darmani Rock being in the fight, and also Clarissa Shields being in her first professional fight. And also, you know, Isaac Chimamba being part of the undercard. But, you know, as a whole, that's not going to garner enough interest to get the pay-per-view buys that you need in order to make some type of a profit out of it that you would hope for. So that's what I get out of it.
As a side note, going back to our first fight that we discussed on the show, do you think there's any reason that Mayweather appeared at the Pacquiao fight at all? Anything behind that?
Well, I mean, I would say there was two things that I was hearing. One was that Manny Pacquiao invited him over to, you know, watch the fight. And the second thing was Floyd Mayweather and Jesse Vargas kind of like have a little relationship there. Jesse Vargas, I think, either trains, you know, in Mayweather gym or around Vegas. And the cut man for Jesse Vargas is the same cut man that Floyd Mayweather uses. So that's the basic connection that Floyd Mayweather has there by going into the Thomas and Mack Center for that particular fight.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what do you guys think about Stephen A. Smith's commentating?
I was hoping not to ask about that. he might as well just stay on First Take, man.
He might have been what?
He might as well stay on First Take, man. He was horrible. Timothy Bradley had a couple of instances where he wanted to just go off on Stephen A. Smith, man, because he was just saying some ridiculous stuff at times, man. I was like, oh, God, why did they put Stephen A. Smith as part of this crew? That was ridiculous, man. That was just horrible. I thought it was bad. Oh, and somebody, like on the Facebook boxing boards was getting on the hairline of Stephen A. Smith too, which is so bad.
I didn't hear the fight, but I mean, just real quick. Personally, I would say disgusted with the fact that they put Stephen Smith on the broadcast, even though they tried to clean it up and match it up with Bradley. Because I mean, Stephen Smith, love him or hate him, you know, he's a loudmouth, he's a deaf ear, talking head, and for them to shove him down our throat on boxing when you never seen him on a major boxing broadcast before, me personally, that's an insult. I don't want to hear him for boxing. I mean, they made the announcement and then he comes out and says, "Oh, I've been a big boxing fan for a long time." I mean, everybody knows about his sparring session with Mayweather, the verbal back and forth that he had when Mayweather was going on the last several years and stuff like that. We know about that. But for to place him in a role like that, to me, like I said, to me, that was an insult. And I'm glad to hear that it went less than favorable. And that's just being nice about it.
I think it's absolutely ridiculous and preposterous that you would even think that Stephen A. Smith. No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, Bradley definitely checked him. And so it was on the same type of thought process that, let's say, the HBO commentary does, where they would, you know, let's say somebody said a point like, I guess it was one of the first matches that was going on where I forgot what match it was, but nevertheless, the main guy, whoever was fighting, was pretty much teeing off, I guess. But then the other guy was in the middle of that. He was landing punches as well, and so he was landing pretty good punches. And so I guess Timothy Bradley's point was, well, if this guy, it was the Asian guy, and maybe Vasquez, maybe it was that one, but if he had more power, then Vasquez would be in trouble. And then Stephen A. Smith was like, well, come on, Tim.
them shots ain't doing nothing. And then, well, maybe it wasn't that fight, but pretty much one of them, somebody pretty much got stung. And he was like, no, no, that stung him. It was a couple times. You're right.
I remember that part. I know what you're talking about.
But nevertheless, Tim Brad was like, nah, are you telling me that this or that or that or this? And then he pretty much checked him, and then he was like, you know, he kind of conceded and was like, well, you would know better than me, that type of thing. But, no,
yeah.
I definitely think they should have put him on an ESPN broadcast, something like that, and then, you know, let him work his way up, because he didn't even do the regular stuff like, you know, oh, that's body shot to the whatever, you know what I'm saying? Like, he didn't even do the play-by-play or any of that, you know.
Oh,
like, Timothy Brad was sort of doing it.
Nah, I think what they had there was they had the setup of Brian Kenny doing the play-by-play and, you know, Timothy Bradley kind of being the guy to follow up. And I guess you had Stephen A. Smith as the guy that, you know, kind of brings in the clips or whatnot, like the who's that dude for HBO that goes in the ring there? Larry Merchant. He was kind of like the Larry Merchant of that whole crew or whatnot, but
okay.
I mean, my thing is, I mean, the way he was doing this thing, I was like, man, you might as well just stick to doing basketball or whatever it is, because you really cannot, you know, actively follow the sport of boxing, especially, you know, if it's like, I mean, with it being his first. You know, live telecast where he commentates on, you know, the fight. I mean, it's a lot different than, you know, being on TV there and then, you know, talking about the fight post, you know, after the fight happens. It's kind of like this. It's almost like if you want to have somebody like a Dan Rafael out there doing it. So I just think that should be his first and his last occurrence on being a commentator in a boxing event. So I just don't see him doing something like that anytime soon on the ESPN telecast if they have a Premier Boxing Champions thing coming up there within the next few months or so. I just don't see him being part of that.
Yeah.
With that being said, I'll be closing off this episode of the Boxing Source Radio Show. Be sure to catch our sister shows here on the MRN Broadcasting Channel with the Cold Hard Truth on Sports, Tuesday nights at 8:30 with Matt Long, and Wednesdays at 8:30, we have the CNT Firestorm Football Talk Show with host Callie Mike and guests Carzell Mathis, Chi-Town, Tony Watley, Stevie Sparks, and myself. So we have a lot of content here within the channel, so make sure that you check that out. And the podcast for the show will be available a little bit later on for listeners to go in and listen to the entire show. And like I say, at the end of every episode, the point of boxing is to hit and not get hit, not to stand and trade. On that note, I'm out. Later.